Blog Talk Radio.
AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo.
Every one of you, you are listening to the Drive at 5 Live, and I am your weekly host, Patricia McDowell, from the great city of Yonkers. I'd like to welcome each and every one of you to the Drive at 5 Live. Each week, we will discuss health and wellness, and we'll guide you to the road to a better and healthy lifestyle with beneficial results. I just like to take this opportunity to thank all of my listeners and everyone who participated in the 1 month awareness on breast cancer and breast cancer research. We had a phenomenal month in the month of August, a lot of information. So if you didn't have if you missed any of the shows, didn't have the opportunity to listen, it's not a problem. Just go to the website, the blogtalkradio.com/, and the Internet Chronicle. And then you can look at all the month, the entire month, every date from the 4th to the 30th. You can see the different topics, and you just click on, you can listen to the entire show. Well, before we call upon our guests, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the friends of the Drive at 5 Live. And one of our friends of the Drive at 5 Live is Avon. Avon is the company for women. It's a leading global beauty company with over $8 billion in revenue. And as the world's greatest direct seller, Avon markets to women in well over 100 countries through over 5 million independent Avon sales representatives. Avon has wonderful skincare. They have wonderful perfumes. They also have a line of curved clothing as well as jewelry. And to take advantage of the Avon opportunity, visit the website at pmc-dow.avonrepresentative.com. That's pmc-dow.avonrepresentative.com. Okay, and if you're interested in becoming a distributor, please go to the website as well. Another one of our friends is Jewels by Elan. Do you know about the new Jewels in Yonkers? It's Jewels by Elan. They are a must-see destination store in Westchester County. Ellen Edwards of Jewels by Elan has hosted many events in the store. Some recent events are poetry jams, charity events in the store, jewelry parties, book signing, just to name a few. All this is done with a Soho vibe. Ellen Edwards features a line she designs as well as some new and up-and-coming designers. It's a great place to shop and have a good conversation and perhaps a cup of tea. The low-key style makes browsing a pleasure. If you haven't stopped by yet, do yourself a favor and take a peek. You can call to make an appointment and schedule a shopping tour with your friends. Visit the website at www.jewelsbyelan.com. That's JewelsByElan.com. Or call 914-512-8578. And we might as well do our last Friends of the Drive at 5 Live before we call in, I guess. Oh, we have two more. So what we'll do, we'll come back to those two. But let me tell you a little bit about our guest. Our guest is Mr. G. Lamont Blackstone. He is the principal of G&L Blackstone & Associates, LLC, a commercial real estate development consulting firm specializing in urban markets and the crafting of public-private partnerships. His clients include municipal agencies, non-for-profit organizations, and developers. He is also one of the founders of DLC Urban Core LLC, a development company which is targeting retail development and redevelopment opportunities in the United States. Mr. Lamont Blackstone was formerly the Chief Investment Officer of the Retail Initiative, Inc., TRI, the nation's first commercial real estate equity fund to target inner-city retail development opportunities and supermarket anchor projects. Today, Mr. Lamont Blackstone will be discussing supermarkets and childhood obesity. So let's get Mr. Blackstone on the radio so he can share all these nuggets with us. Mr. Blackstone, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me, Pat?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. And I just want to take this opportunity to welcome you to the Drive at 5 Live.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, wonderful. Well, I just read your bio, but is there anything you want to add to what I've said? And also, you can start, begin to tell us a little bit about childhood obesity and why this subject matter is touched your heart.
Sure. Well, I first became interested in the notion of inner-city retail and the presence or lack thereof of urban supermarkets probably way back in the early 90s. And then, as you mentioned, I served previously as part of the management team for a organization called the Retail Initiative, and actually I was part of their founding management in terms of launching that real estate investment fund that was launched really with a specific mission of helping to bring supermarkets and helping to develop supermarket-anchored properties and shopping centers in the nation's historically underserved urban areas. And, ever since then I've been focused in some way, shape, or form in what are the opportunities as well as what are the challenges in developing retail projects in urban areas and helping to make sure that urban areas have access, if you will, to the same quality of retail amenities that often are seen in other markets, typically suburban markets. So really, I'm a commercial real estate guy. I don't consider myself a public policy expert, so to speak. However, to the extent that there is an overlap between the notion of how to get the private sector to bring healthier food alternatives to urban markets, to the extent that there's an overlap or a nexus between that particular mission and what is increasingly becoming a major health issue as it relates to food deserts, as it relates to obesity, and even more specifically childhood obesity, then yes, you can consider me very much operating in that same space and being very much concerned with regards to bringing healthy food alternatives to urban communities and inner city communities?
You know, I didn't realize that, and it sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, that the community at large can play an active role in the type of supermarket chain that is going to come within their community or demand a certain type of quality inventory.
Oh, absolutely. And as far as the role that the community can play with regards to bringing healthier food alternatives to the communities, perhaps a good example, I hearken back to my efforts. I was part of a team, and it wasn't very much a team effort that came together for the purpose of developing or bringing a supermarket to Upper Manhattan, specifically 125th Street in East Harlem. And actually, that was the first project that I worked on in my prior incarnation with the Retail Initiative. And that was an effort that was spearheaded by both my former employer, the Retail Initiative, but also in concert with the Community Development Corporation formed by Abyssinian Baptist Church, one of the premier congregations, one of the most prominent congregations in the greater New York area. And Abyssinian Development Corporation had a broad mission of community empowerment, community development, and joined forces with us under the leadership of then President Karen Phillips to help bring what became the largest supermarket in Manhattan, the Pathmark supermarket up on 125th Street in East Harlem. And that very much was a community effort. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for the community organizing, the political organizing, the efforts of political defense in the aftermath of some misguided attempts to help kill the project, that supermarket project, never would have happened.
Wow. That's unbelievable. Now, if a supermarket chain is being proposed for a community, what's the first step that the community should do to get involved?
Well, hopefully welcome it with open arms, which generally was the case for, the development team, our team's efforts as related to the Harlem Pathmark project. However, we did encounter some opposition and some significant opposition from various sources. But it really, perhaps a better way of answering that is, let's say it's a community is devoid of a supermarket. I guess one way of looking at it is, what can the community do? Well, such decisions as far as where a supermarket locates are really made by the real estate department of a particular supermarket chain. Now, sometimes, depending upon the nature of the supermarket operator, if it isn't a major chain, let's say like a Pathmark or let's say like a Stop and Shop, speak to a couple major supermarket chains that operate here in the greater New York area, they may be operated by independent operators, let's say such as the Key Foods or the C-Towns or the ShopRites. Those tend to be independently owned operators and independently owned operations. Okay, so either the pathway of access is to the real estate department of a major supermarket chain or, let's say, contacting an independent operator that community representatives may be familiar with and to explore whether or not they would be interested in locating a supermarket within that area. In the case of our efforts in Harlem, it started with a local community activist who felt that East Harlem and that particular area of East Harlem needed to be served by a supermarket operator, and had approached Pathmark, which at that particular point in time, which was, I believe, the early 90s, had successfully opened a supermarket within the Central Ward of Newark, which was the first supermarket, full-service supermarket, to open in the Central Ward of Newark in who knows how many years. And she basically contacted the powers that be at Pathmark and asked whether or not they would consider coming to East Harlem. So that gives you an idea in terms of how such things have happened in the past. There also is a role, very much so, for political leadership to play in helping to bring supermarkets to the area. And quite frankly, I have a direct experience with regard to that, because a few years ago, I was at the convention for the shopping center industry. There is an organization called the International Council of Shopping Centers, of which I'm a member, and I also serve as a voluntary officer. One of the mission objectives, or one of the missions of that particular trade association, which represents all of the major shopping center developers, all of the major commercial property owners, as well as all of the major retailers, well, once a year, that particular group convenes in Las Vegas to hold their annual convention. And I'm familiar with the example of a city council person from the city of Chicago, and their council people are called aldermen in that great city. She had sent a delegation a few years ago to that particular convention for the purpose of identifying developers who would be interested in coming into Chicago, and specifically coming into the south side of Chicago, a portion of which she represented, and just basically to stoke the fire, so to speak, to get retailers interested in and developers interested in the notion of helping to develop retail properties and supermarkets in her particular ward. So, Pat, that gives you an idea in terms of what, you know, some communities have done for the purpose of attracting supermarkets and healthy eating alternatives to their neighborhoods.
I'm actually from Harlem, and I remember growing up in Harlem and realizing back then that there were very limited choices in terms of the big market supermarkets in that community. So when Pathmark went there, I totally could understand and relate to the community and applaud the community for having and reaching out and having such a great chain built in their community. So now this, we got to the fast forward. We decided upon, we reached out, we did the dance, we decided that we're going to have a supermarket in a much-needed community.
Mm-hmm.
How can the community work with the chain or the individual store owner to make sure that there are healthy eating choices being offered at that particular location?
Sure. Well, one of the things that the community can do, and again, I'll emphasize, and Pat, of course, you can appreciate this, being an elected official, one of the things that I think it's important to do is to work closely with your elected officials to get them to also work closely with the supermarket operator or the supermarket chain, you know, to have, you know, a discussion in terms of, okay, what are you looking for in terms of an ideal location? Is there a problem, for example, or a challenge with regards to finding a site of sufficient size and of the right configuration, as in the right shape, you know, and at the right location to maximize the likelihood that you can operate successfully? And it's important for community members as well as, you know, elected officials to recognize that, you know, for supermarket chains and supermarket operators and for the developers of such properties, for them it's a business, and It ultimately is a business decision. They can be appreciative of the desire of community members that they feel that they should have a supermarket. But the fact of the matter is not every community is going to be able to support a supermarket. And maybe it's a question in terms of the type of supermarket that a particular supermarket chain operates. Many, as you're aware, operate large stores. A good example is Stop and Shop. And in over the past decade or so, in many instances, supermarkets have increased the size of their supermarkets. And not every neighborhood, not every community can support a 50,000 or 60,000 or in some instances a 70,000 square foot supermarket. But getting back to what community members can do, one, being mindful of that, two, working with their elected officials to find out what local government can do, and it isn't necessarily always the case in terms of whether local government is being called upon to provide incentives or invest dollars. Oftentimes, a lot can be done to help facilitate that type of development project. Simply, if the supermarket operator, supermarket chain, has some very good comfort that they're not going to face a lot of opposition, as was the case with the Harlem Pathmark project, but we were able to get through that to the decision to operate a store, and also to the extent that there may be actions that need to be done as far as rezoning a particular property because it's not currently, doesn't currently have the right zoning to accommodate a supermarket. You know, those are examples of the type of things that both the community as well as local government can do to help facilitate a retailer and a grocer's decision to locate in a particular area.
Mm-hmm. If a supermarket is already in someone's community, you already have the supermarket there, they've been there for maybe years or whatever, can community as a whole go back to the manager, at that point, I guess it'll be the store manager, to discuss setting up healthy choices within the within his chain, within his store location?
Well, I'm not necessarily familiar with any examples where what I'm hearing is whether a community could play a role with regards to actual merchandising decisions within the supermarket. And the answer to that is maybe, maybe not. Let's put it like this. Any smart entrepreneur, whether it's just a single store supermarket or whether it's a major chain, will probably welcome input from the community with regards to suggestions as far as how the supermarket might be better merchandised to satisfy the community. So, for example, even in the case of a major chain, let's say like a Pathmark, mm-hmm. The general manager of that store probably would welcome suggestions from the community in terms of, you know what, we notice that you carry these type of grocery items, but you may or may not be aware that this particular community has, let's say, a significant Caribbean population. And as such, you know, it would be great if you carried a selection of fruits and vegetables, or, you know, vegetables that tend to be particularly representative of or particularly popular in West Indian communities or in Latino communities. I mean, that type of feedback can be helpful for a store, regardless of whether it's a major chain or whether it's an independently owned operation.
I think also, like you said before, the supermarkets are in the business to make money. That's the reason why they're in your community. And I think that if the community demands or starts to put in the request for certain items within your store and let the manager know that this is a concern and these are the needs in which they want to address as a community, I think the manager will listen, because if the neighborhood or the community decides to go somewhere else to seek these items that he's not supplying the community with, I think that he, you know, he will lose business in the long run. So I think any smart manager would be open to have discussions with communities or community leaders as relates to diet.
I would agree as well, and I think it's also important for the community to be patient and to be willing to provide that type of feedback. Now, for example, I live in your neighboring municipality, Pat, the great city of Mount Vernon, New York, and I live in the Fleetwood area of Mount Vernon, where we had a situation where we had a supermarket, an AMP, that we lost some time ago, and the community wasn't up in arms about that. That store and its property was acquired by a major drugstore chain, and initially the community wasn't very happy about that and the fact that they lost their supermarket. However, you know, our government, our local government, you know, had a priority, as I understood it, you know, to make sure that the community got a replacement supermarket. And then after some effort, we did get a replacement supermarket that actually ended up going into a retrofit of a former restaurant operation that, you know, had struggled. So now we have this new supermarket operation, which I believe is an independently operated operation, and I'm delighted because I now have a replacement supermarket in my neighborhood. They did an excellent job in terms of retrofitting the space. It's, you know, a decent sized supermarket, but it's not a superstore, so to speak, as let's say a Stop and Shop. One of the things that I'm hopeful is that my neighbors in Fleetwood and my neighbors not too far from where I live in Bronxville, you know, will continue patronize the store even more. And, you know, if they have suggestions in terms of, well, you ought to be carrying this, or we have concern about your prices with regards to that, provide that type of feedback and embrace the supermarket, embrace the store, and support it. Otherwise, if that doesn't happen, then and I don't think this is going to happen, but if that type of support, that type of connection with the supermarket doesn't happen, then you run the risk of losing the supermarket. So community involvement, I think, is important. Enlightened community involvement is very important.
I would agree with you 100% with that. Do you think, I know you wrote an article on this subject matter. Am I correct?
I've written probably a few articles and have had a few articles featured on the subject of inner city supermarkets and urban supermarkets, yes. Mm-hmm.
And through your research, have you found that there's been some kind of disparity when the community does not get involved, that our community are targeted for foods that are high in fat, high in sugar content, very starchy? Have you found that in your research?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that our communities are targeted, so to speak. But here's the reality, and the undisputable reality. Within the past, let's say, few years, there's been a concept that has been coined that has become extremely popular, and that has been the concept of what is known as food deserts. I'm familiar, and as I mentioned, I've done work in, and I'm working now in Chicago as it relates to supermarket anchor development. There was a major research effort that was done by a social researcher in the city of Chicago, and I don't know if she first came up with the term, but the coinage food deserts has become increasingly popular. And basically what that speaks to is the notion that whether it's Chicago, whether it's New York City, whether it's other urban areas across this country, there are in many urban communities, broad geographical territories where those communities either lack supermarkets and healthy sources of foods, or there's great difficulty in terms of getting access to those healthy sources of food. And there's a imbalance, so to speak, with regards to the presence of grocery stores, greengrocers, supermarkets, and the prevalence, if you will, of quick service restaurants, which are not the, let's say, healthiest sources of food. There has been extensive research that has been done relating to such food deserts in the south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And no big surprise, you know, we see other examples of such food deserts in other parts of the country as well. So to some extent, it's become a public policy issue, and one that perhaps the most, one of the most credible sources in this nation has embraced, that being our First Lady, Michelle Obama, you know, with her Let's Move initiative. She has embraced wholeheartedly the notion of healthy food alternatives, and specifically as it relates to an epidemic of childhood obesity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she has definitely been leading the fight, as well as the First Lady of New York State, Mrs. Patterson. She has been, I think her program is One Step or whatever, something like that, where she was going around the state of New York with that initiative in terms of trying to promote exercise and eating properly to reduce and to eliminate obesity in children. You know, in the, an article on the healthaffairs.org, they cited that children are eating more snacks in this day and age in 2010. Mm-hmm. They're eating more salty chips, sweetened sodas, which is a shocking, candy bars, we just had Halloween, and than ever before. They said the trend shows that children are averaging nearly 3 snacks per day, with 27% of their daily calorie comes from snacks, which is unbelievable. What are your feelings about that?
Well, there's that saying, we've heard it time and time again, you are what you eat.
Yes.
And, you know, the nutritional vacuum that we're seeing, you know, time and time again in so many communities just portends some major problems for, you know, that generation of kids that is growing up with these poor nutritional habits. And, you know, as a real estate developer, as a real estate consultant, you know, I've been focused, if you will, on the supply aspect of it, so to speak, in terms of what can the private sector do. And again, this has also been an issue that my trade association, the International Council of Shopping Centers, has been focused on as well, because we have an underserved markets task force. You know, what can the private sector do, you know, in its pursuit of, you know, profit, but in its pursuit of profit to also, you know, effectuate or affect a social mission? What can we do to bring quality, healthy alternatives to urban markets? And that's a part of the answer. But I'm also reminded, I had a conversation with a social worker by the name of Lisa White, who actually is an award-winning social worker and helped to found the Healthy Foods Program at the South Bronx Healthy Foods Program at Bronx Lebanon Hospital in the South Bronx. In my conversation with Ms. White, she pointed out that as important as it is to, you know, bring grocery stores and supermarkets to inner city areas, to urban markets, that isn't enough. And she basically stated the point very poignantly when she said, people don't eat what they don't know. And what she meant by that is, in her counseling work with families and her counseling work with poor families and with kids or what have you, she encountered numerous instances of, you know, mothers, you know, pregnant women who unfortunately just didn't know, I know this sounds bizarre, just didn't know, you know, the basics of proper nutrition and didn't have the proper nutritional habits. So from Ms. White, the social worker's perspective, in many of our communities of color, there needs to be educational work done with regards to these are the type of foods you should be eating, particularly when you're pregnant, when you're expecting, but eat regardless of that, and even after you've given birth, you know, to your kids. This is the way you should be eating, or these are the type of foods that you should be eating and feeding to your kids. And if they don't learn that at home, okay, then my assumption is that the onus falls upon the kids to learn that at the schools. And I question, and I'm no education on the public school system, but I question whether or not that's a mission, so to speak, that really should be thrust upon the schools.
As well as a lot of times when women in the inner city are expecting, they go to different birthing centers and birthing clinics. And when that should be number one in the list in terms of a workshop or a class, teaching the young mother, you know, the importance of a proper diet, a balanced diet during pregnancy, and also continuing that same program even after birth, not only just for the child, but for the entire family as well. Again, according to the, you mentioned about policies and recommendations, the healthaffairs.org, they recommend several things. One, they recommend limiting advertising that's directed at our children, that tries to influence them to purchase unhealthy and high-calorie foods. And like you said before, if you don't know, then you won't explore the avenue. So if our commercials really target more things like, you know, buy fruits, and at one time there was a lot of fruit commercials, like buy the bananas and that type of thing. I think that, you know, and then showing that it's cool to eat fruits and or whatever. And I think, and when they have these programs where kids watch, or with little cartoons or whatever show they're watching, they saw that their favorite characters were eating more healthy type things, that when you're sitting at the table or when they're outside, I think kids would be more receptive to that. What is your thoughts on that?
I think that can definitely be helpful as part of the overall educational effort. I'm not the expert with regards to such things. My fundamental concern is, as far as, you know, childhood obesity and the epidemic is concerned, if it's not dealt with, then we'll have a generation that'll grow up that'll be at higher risk of other health problems as it relates to what constitutes the nexus, if you will, with obesity, whether it be diabetes, whether it be cancer, whether it be cardiovascular disease, whether it be hypertension. All of those things are related to the notion of unhealthy eating or the lack of healthy nutritional alternatives. And there was a study that was done. I'd mentioned that there's been a lot of research done on the subject of food deserts in Chicago. Mary Gallagher, who did some of the seminal research on this particular subject, published a report entitled Examining the Impact of Food Deserts on Public Health in Chicago. And as part of her research and gathering of statistics and statistical analysis, you know, she ranked a variety of different communities with regards to food balance and access to healthy food alternatives. And one of the things that she discovered was those communities, and unfortunately many of them were in African-American sections of town, those communities that have the worst food balance, so to speak, as far as healthy food access, had the highest death rates. Okay, just to give you an idea in terms of the range, the communities with the best access to healthy food alternatives within the city of Chicago, and being mindful this is focused on the city of Chicago, had a death rate or death statistics of 0.56 deaths per 1,000 people, whereas those communities, and again, keep in mind we're talking about, by and large, African-American communities, those communities that had the worst access to healthy food alternatives had death rates that were more than double than the best those of the best communities, 1.27 deaths per 1,000. Now, perhaps a more striking way of looking at those very grim statistics is a metric that she coined called years of potential life loss or living loss. And for the worst communities, she found that in terms of death by diabetes, so to speak, the worst communities in Chicago had roughly 45 and a half years of potential years of life loss versus those communities that had the best access had something in the order of 25 years of potential life loss. So something in the order of 20 years of life in terms of a difference, so to speak, in terms of life expectancy between those communities with the best access to healthy food alternatives versus those with the worst. 20 years of life.
That is unbelievable, and I tell you, unacceptable. And I tell you, one of the blames in our communities, and I think one of the reasons because we're not very active as parents is our in terms of PTAs is our schools. You know, some schools I found as I travel within the city of Yonkers, some schools have. They promote health. They promote healthy snacks, and they have eliminated vending machines that have sodas and all kinds of snacks that you know, like brownies or whatever. You know, they eliminate these types of things in their schools, and I think that's another area which you know we as parents should put our foot down and have conversations with like our board of ed. You know, say, you know, these types of programs, these types of food choices are not acceptable in our schools as well. So, you know, it's not only the supermarket chain, but also our schools that are not promoting healthy choices.
Well, I think as far as the supermarket chains, I'm not so sure that they're not promoting healthy choices. Again, I think it's the issue of making sure that communities of color, and it's not just community of colors in terms that afflicts these, that are affected by these food deserts, but oftentimes communities of color are affected, as I've already illustrated. I don't think it's so much that the supermarkets, I think it's one, making sure those communities are adequately served by supermarkets in terms of having supermarkets or green grocers or what have you. But yes, I do agree that whether it's at home or whether it's in the schools, you know, there's work that needs to be done with regards to educating kids, you know, how to grow up and strong and healthy by making the right nutritional choices. And I think the key word there is choices. And don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating a ban of quick service restaurants, so on and so forth, but it's really, from my perspective, all about making sure that there's balance and that there's that, you know, households and communities have as good access to green grocers and supermarkets as they might have to a McDonald's or, you know, other quick service restaurants.
I think in addition to having supermarkets strategically placed within the community, I think also what needs to be done, I think, you know, and that's particularly in the urban community where a lot of people for some reason can't get to a supermarket. I know from my area, which I represent, there's if you do a triangle, there's three supermarkets, two ShopRite and one Food Emporium, I think it's going to be AOP, I think they call themselves Food Emporium now. And if you're in the middle or in the center, you know, you have to have a car,
right,
access to a car to get to them. So I find that many people shop at the local bodegas,
mm-hmm,
or little supermarket, little storefronts.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into those stores, the little small stores, if it's not, Korean owned or Korean based, Asian based, you don't see fruits. You really don't. I can't remember going into a bodega and seeing, you know, a display of apples or grapes or bananas. You know, the first thing that you see when you walk in, the first thing that you see is a rack of potato chips.
Sure. Well, I think what you're referring to, Pat, are convenience stores, the little neighborhood corner stores that we see in so many communities. And, you know, the nature of those operations is such that, one, they don't have but so much space, so much square footage, and the way that they operate is by carrying a lot of, if you will, dry goods or non-perishable, so to speak, as opposed to, you know, the type of fare and healthy fare that, let's say, a little green grocer that may not itself be that big, may only occupy maybe 1,000 square feet or so, but still, nature of their operation is such that that's what they're focused on. And you hit the proverbial nail on the head. Part of the problem with food deserts is that maybe not so much that there aren't any supermarkets around, but the access to such supermarkets is a challenge for a lot of households. And one way of coming to grips with this for those folks who may be interested is that the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a website that they sponsor called the Food Environment Atlas. And this is a information source, a data source that provides statistics on every county in the United States in terms of access to food and healthy food alternatives. And not to bombard your listening audience with a whole bunch of statistics, but if I might, I'd just like to share a couple items that I'm able to pull from that particular information source. So, for example, I live in Westchester, Pat, and you live in Westchester. Just looking at Westchester County, according to this USDA website, in Westchester County there are approximately 0.439 grocery stores per every 1,000 people in the county.
Yeah.
That compares to let's say, Kings County, Brooklyn, that has roughly 0.58 grocery stores per thousand. It compares more favorably to Bergen County in New Jersey that has 0.29 or roughly 0.3 grocery stores per thousand. However, another way of looking at this issue as far as access is the percentage of households with no car and have to travel greater than one mile distance in order to get to a store. When you look at it that way, Westchester has roughly 62% of the population, 62% of the county's population or of households, okay? So in other words, 62% of the county's households have no car and have to travel more than a one-mile distance in order to get to a store. Whereas Nassau County, which in certain ways is a somewhat of equivalent county in terms of total population and to some extent with regards to levels of affluence, so on and so forth, Nassau County, only 27% of the households in that county have no car and have to travel greater than 1 mile in order to get to a store. So that's an interesting, in my opinion, an interesting differential between, let's say, Nassau County and Westchester.
Well, I tell you, I think, and as you opened up in the beginning, you know, it's important to have, you know, supermarkets in the community because one of the reasons is because the supermarkets give individuals living in these communities a greater access to fresh foods and vegetables.
And if there's anything encouraging, I think it's that the federal government is increasingly focused on this issue. Obviously, as we've already indicated, you know, our current First Lady has really taken on this particular issue as a policy initiative. And according to federal estimates, something on the order of 23.5 million Americans live in these, you know, food deserts that are devoid of healthy food alternatives and in essence constitute, if you will, nutritional wastelands.
You know, you talk about government and getting involved. One of the things that I know that we do in the city of Yonkers, I sit on the board of the Downtown Waterfront bid. And one of the things that we have in the bid area in the city of Yonkers is farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And farmer's markets are actually excellent because one of the things, they really work with the community.
Mm-hmm.
They have coupons for seniors, discount coupons for seniors. They take good programs, and it's absolutely wonderful. And to have a relationship with farmers, and you know, that is really another alternative for the community. Would you agree?
Absolutely, and you know, some may think of farmers markets as being corny. Excuse the pun. But they can serve a very valuable need in filling that void, so to speak, of vegetables and healthy food alternatives. And quite frankly, another role that they can serve is since they are a destination type of operation and use, and even if they may only operate on the weekends, as let's say many farmers markets do, you know, they can serve as a vehicle for bringing activity into a downtown and, you know, bringing people, bringing shoppers, you know, creating, you know, lively atmosphere on, let's say, the weekend in a downtown. So they can serve that purpose as well.
Yes, absolutely. We food market is actually on Thursdays. And during the warm season, it runs from, from the spring until maybe the week after November, I believe. And during that time, we have entertainment. We may have a little jazz band or this and that and the other. And you're right. It makes people are used to it being there. It's right in the heart of our B Square area.
Mm-hmm.
People are used to it being there, and they come, and it's really good, and it gives people opportunity to have fresh fruit and vegetables. And I tell you, this is really a wonderful, wonderful time of year. It's for individuals who have cars. Many of the local, when I say farm in the area, they open up their doors to people to come in to pick pumpkins. And for those children who really don't know where food comes from, they have to be outside of the food market. This is a wonderful opportunity for families to go and to visit the farm and actually pick their own pumpkin. And then they, at that time, talk with the farmers about, the fruits and vegetables and stuff that grows on the farm. Because a lot of times our children just don't know, and if they've never gone south, they've never been on a farm. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, getting back to our discussion about schools and the educational system,
mm-hmm.
when you think about whether it be middle school curriculums or whether it be high school curriculums,
mm-hmm.
think about what the opportunities may be to, if you will, enliven or enhance the educational experience as it relates to the study of biology, as it relates to the study of chemistry, to tie that into nutrition, to actually make it, to some extent, to provide an ear of practicality to the study of biology, to provide an ear of practicality to the study of chemistry as relates to the chemistry of nutrition and or what have you, in terms of this is what food does for you,
mm-hmm.
and to tie that in. And maybe to piggyback on what you just said, to have a class trip or a field trip to a farm so that, high school students, can see how this stuff, if you will, that they learn in biology actually works in the proverbial real world.
That's an excellent idea. Excellent. And for families don't know how to go about and listening to the radio show, how about go about finding these farms? You can go on the website. Just go on Google. I'm the Google queen. Google local farms to see
mm-hmm.
what comes up. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If you had to predict, Lamont, people are becoming more and more savvy and people are becoming more and more conscious. What's your prediction in terms of, our community as it relates to obesity moving forward?
Well, Pat, I'm a developer, and part of my anatomy as a developer is that, we're inclined to be optimistic about all sorts of things. So I have to remain optimistic, but at the same time, I can't necessarily look at the world through rose-colored glasses, and I have to be mindful of, the extremely grim statistics. So I'm optimistic, one, that the course can be changed. But if the course isn't changed, we're in deep trouble. As it is, the life expectancy of African Americans is substantially lower than the greater community. The life expectancy of African American men and the life expectancy of men is always lower than women. But the life expectancy of African American men and males is considerably shortened and lower than the broader community. And, you know, with the epidemic that we have as it relates to childhood obesity, the trajectory is not good. However, being optimistic, if we can mobilize, if we can organize, if we can educate, just as, for example, you are doing with your radio show, if some of the things that we were talking about here can become more prevalent, you know, if, you know, I just wish Michelle Obama could be multiplied by a factor of 100 and 1,000 and 10,000 times. But, you know, as great as she is, you know, the First Lady can't be everywhere.
Right.
You know, if we could have, you know, more Michelle Obamas out there, you know, stumping, promoting, you know, we could undertake revolutionary changes, cultural changes, a cultural revolution, if you will, as it relates to this particular issue, as well as some of the other issues that, you know, afflict and challenges that afflict our communities, our economy.
I hope that you're right, Lamont. I think that it has. I mean, some things have to change, and I think as people, like you said before, as the information is being made available to people, I think more and more people are going to make the right choice for themselves as well as for their families.
Another important aspect of this, Pat, is not only is it a fundamental health issue, okay, and yes, we can see it in, you know, this generation of children that is far heavier than it should be, is not eating properly. You can extrapolate in terms of what that does that mean if, you know, my son or my daughter or my nephew or my niece, you know, proceeds along that trajectory in terms of overweight and all the health problems that entails. But it's not only a question in terms of health, and that's dire and troubling in and of itself. Perhaps what is not talked about is, you know, what the other effects or ramifications may be, not only for one's health, but, interestingly, for one's wealth. And, you know, if adults, if children are overweight and they grow up to be overweight adults, and that brings on various type of problems or what have you, that can, one, affect the way they eat, their nutritional habits obviously can affect, you know, how well they perform in school.
Mm-hmm.
How well they perform in school, you know, obviously has an impact in terms of what their economic prospects are like in life, whether it may be going on to college, becoming gainfully employed. But even if they become, you know, gainfully employed, if by virtue of the health choices or the nutritional choices that they've made and being overweight brings on health problems when they become an adult, you know, that can affect a variety, affect aspects of their personal financial future. One, whether or not they're going to be able to be insured, okay, or obtain life insurance, or for that matter, whether or not health bills, and who knows what will be the state of health insurance in the future, okay? But hopefully health insurance will not be an issue. But to the extent that the nutritional choices that you made growing up have had an impact on your health, to the extent that, you know, you encounter health problems later on in life that, you know, entail, you know, costs that, let's say, are not covered by health insurance, that has a direct, immediate, and direct impact on a household's financial future and financial profile.
Wow. Well, Lamont is, I can't believe it's 6 o'clock, actually it's a little bit after. So before we end the call, I'm going to give a little bit about our sponsors, but I want you to, again, give your contact information for those who are listening who would like to contact you to to ask a question or to discuss this topic further.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I can be reached via my email, which is Blackstone Global, that's BlackstoneGlobal, Blackstone Global, all one word, no separators, at AOL.com.
Well, okay, Lamar, thank you so much for that, and thank you for being a guest on the Drive at 5 Live.
And Pat, thank you so much for the invitation. It was a delight.
Thank you again. Okay, listeners, before I let you go, I didn't go over all of our sponsors for the show. Another one of our sponsors, what we call Friends of Drive at 5 Live, is Artist International. And Artist International is a skincare, wellness, reshaping garment, and they just went green, so they have green products for you and your family. And Honest International is located throughout the United States, Canada, and the Dominican Republic, and Mexico, parts of Africa, and Canada, and the UK. So if you were interested in the wellness products by Honest International, visit my website at bodymagic2go.com. That's bodymagic2go, and explore and shop. And if you're looking for a lifestyle dream vacation, take your next vacation in the beautiful Dominican Republic. Look for a VIP all-inclusive luxury resort. Look no more. Visit LifestyleDreamVacation.com. That's LifestyleDreamVacation.com. And have all your fantasies and dreams come true at the beautiful island of the Dominican Republic. Okay, guys, that's our that concludes our show for this evening. I'd like to, again, thank each and every one of you personally for listening to the show. And if you have missed any of this show or any of the past shows, feel free to go to the blogtalkradio.com/Internet Chronicle and listen to all of our shows. We've had some phenomenal guests. And if you would like to be a guest on the show, remember this topic is wellness and holistic practices. You can email me at Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, that's Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, at Ardyss, ardyssny.com. That's Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, at Ardyss, ardyssny.com. And just say that you would like to be a guest on the show, send me your topic, and a contact information. And if you like to advertise on the show, all of my advertisers are mentioned on the show as well as featured in our email draft that goes out to our listeners. Please send that as well in an email form to Tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, at ardyssny.com, and state that you would like to be a friend of the Friends of the Drive at 5 Live, and let me know what your product is or service, and then again our contact information. So with that, I hope that each and every one of you have a healthy week, and we look forward to seeing you next week, where our guest speaker is going to be a nutritionalist and from Columbia College, and her name is Mordine, and her last name is Nelson, so Dr. Nelson, I believe it is, and she will be our guest. So with that, everyone, have a fantastic, healthy week. Good night.
AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo. AVS Media Demo.
Media Demo.